Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the Ides of May, Anno Domini 2010, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Benrick.
I'm Steve Ray.
And we are going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, a few things to lose, nothing to choose. No, the other way around. I'm going to start with the news. This is for all those of you who have lost your lives in Facebook and the many, many thousands of
no life
things that are in there. Concerns over Facebook's new privacy policy and the online social network's recent efforts to spread its information across the web have led some of the site's faithful to delete their accounts, or at least to try to. On Wednesday's episode of a podcast called This Week in Technology, host Leo Laporte, a well-known tech pundit, said he had to search WikiHow, a how-to site, to figure out how to delete his Facebook account permanently. After finding the delete button, which he said is hidden deep within the site's menus, Laporte proceeded to delete his account during the online broadcast. That's it. He's gone, he said during the show, and I think that's the right thing to do. It's unclear how many people have chosen to delete their Facebook accounts in recent weeks. The popular social network doesn't publish statistics on how many people quit the site, but there has been an uproar, a great lot of uproar online about Facebook's alleged lack of concern for the privacy of its users' personal information. And it's clear that some people have become so upset they're leaving the networking site, which has more than 400 million subscribers.
Yeah, they're really big on saying how many people subscribe, but not how many people quit.
Exactly. Still, the account deletions aren't likely aren't numerous enough to affect the site's overall size. Facebook spokes individual Annie Ta said that Facebook has grown by more than 10 million active users since late April. In recent weeks, the site has been hit by several privacy bugs and scares that, among other things, made private chat conversations briefly visible to Facebook friends. And on April 21st, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg announced a new Facebook feature called the Open Graph, which essentially brings Facebook-like functionality to a number of different websites. Some Facebook users said they are bothered by the fact that their online preferences are showing up at all over the internet now, instead of just on Facebook.com. Facebook appears to be rattled a bit by these changes. The blog All Facebook reports that the site's executives called an all-hands meeting Thursday to discuss its privacy policy in the light of recent criticism, and there are rumors that the site may amend its policies, as CNET has reported. So that brings us to our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. The poll is very simple. It says, are you happy with Facebook's lack of privacy? The choices are, doesn't bother me, I'm not happy, I dumped Facebook, and lack of what now? So far, we have 42 votes, and I'm not happy is first with complete ignorance, second, followed by it doesn't bother me, and two of you have dumped Facebook. So that's our poll at soundbites.org. Now, when you're done with that poll, I know you have a lot more to say about privacy and Facebook and a whole bunch of other stuff. So just simply clicking a button in a poll is not enough for you. Ain't going to do it. So what you need to do once you have voted in the poll is take a look at the little yellow box underneath and select Give Us Your Opinion. Click on that, and it will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
And there you can enter your opinion. So far, we have five people who have entered their opinion. And you can join them there. Check out what I do at AskNick.com. It's a very cool site. It's only $15 a year. I have no idea why you're not a member. And then when you come back to soundbites.org, you can join us in the polls and everything else. And in the meantime, what are your thoughts about Facebook and privacy? Is it a big deal? Is it a tempest in a teapot? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Phone lines are open. Operator is standing by.
I am?
Yes, you are. Yeah, you're not standing. Sitting.
Yep. That's true. I couldn't sit. There's no way I can do this job and try sitting.
We've said that. There's no way you can do this job. Oh, while you're sitting. I see. I was confused. Just momentarily confused.
One of the big issues with Facebook is that it was designed to share your information. That was the whole point of joining Facebook and sharing your information. So there have been some interesting cartoons and quotes from and about the Facebook leaders saying, what's the big deal? You signed up to Facebook to share your information. But it's turning out to be how much information is getting shared. And I read a blog post this week where someone was talking with a teenager, you know, which big Facebook user, and said, you know, have you friended your mom? Because some of the posts on your Facebook page are, you know, pretty risque for your mom. So, oh, no, I wouldn't friend my mom. Well, it turns out she had friended her aunt, and her aunt had friended her mom. So mom could read it anyway.
Yep.
Because it's a friend of a friend.
Yep.
And she was shocked. You know, people don't realize that anything you post pretty much can be read by anybody because everybody's friending everybody, and it's a big issue.
Yeah, it is.
If you don't want anyone to see it, don't put it on the internet. Basically.
Well we've said that before, you know, especially excuse me, when it comes to job postings. You know, when you went to that spring break back in 2008 and might have done some wild stuff, and the pictures were posted, and now you're going for employment, and they're looking up any information because it's just a Google away and find your pictures here and there, and it's like, could be interesting.
Well, and that's just it, isn't it? I mean, people don't think, I guess.
When you're a kid, you don't think about stuff like that. And then as soon as you go to find a job, you know, that picture of you in, you know, Cancun, you know, flashing the camera, which seemed, you know, cool 6 years ago with the caption, oh, so drunk. You know,
yeah,
really,
right.
Bosses don't like that anymore.
Well, and I don't honestly know of a single company of any large size that doesn't have somebody in HR whose job it is to look you up on Facebook. And if you don't think they don't know how to get around the security, you're wrong. So if you've got stuff up there that you think is private, give it up, because it's not. And the reality is that it's okay. You know, post whatever you want. It's your life. Do what you want with it. But if you're out there looking for a high-paying job or, you know, a good place somewhere, really, he's right. Having those pictures of you puking on the beach in Cancun is really not going to get you that job.
Oh, a friend of mine also sent me this link for why didn't I get the job? And it shows all these different pictures of folks with these different tattoos and piercings and everything else. I mean, there was one guy who had all these tattoos, and then on his neck, he put like these eyelets so that he could strap and it looked like a boot, like he laced up a boot.
Nice.
He's lacing up his neck.
Clancy
exactly. Brown in Highlander.
There was a lovely young girl who used to come to market. We have a coffee stand at the Public Market, Flower City Coffee Company, best coffee in Rochester.
What's the webpage on that?
TheBeanQueen.com. Not much there. She's not listening because she's busy at market right at this moment.
We're safe.
Right,
I figured
right,
as much.
Right. You're safe. You're the one who started it.
Yep.
And she had multiple piercings.
Ouch.
Yeah, 8 or 10 rings in her lip and in each eyebrow and et cetera, et cetera. It was fine. I mean, it's art and it's your own body.
Painful.
And you can do what you, well, right, exactly. But she, you know, and she was a lovely thing and she looked good with it all. And one day she came and they were all gone. I said, what happened? She says, I got to get a job.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I get it.
I mean, you know, I don't mind, you know, the typical earrings, you know, and that type of stuff. But when they start piercing, you know, through the lip and they have these other spikes in there hanging out.
Especially if you have to deal with customers. You know, that's a big turnoff. We hear that a lot, you know, people who come into our store that have gone to other stores and have been ignored by the kid working behind the counter or, you know, didn't like their purple hair and you know, when you have to deal with customers, you know, you have to look presentable. It's annoying to those of us that like our hair long and whatnot.
Yep.
And
Right, right, right. And you know,
I'm turning into my father. You get a haircut.
Exactly. I'm a child of the 60s. I had hair down to there and everything else, right? But the reality is that you can't fault people for not feeling good about seeing someone who doesn't look like them. I mean, that's human nature. Mm-hmm. You should be big enough to get past it, right? But it happens, and I get that. I try not to be, you know, to have that knee-jerk reaction that we all have. But it happens, you know?
Well, I mean, it's just also like tattoos. I mean, you know, I sport a number of tattoos, too. But for the most part, you can't see mine when I'm working. But when you get some of these young ladies, and again, it's nothing against, but they've got the full arm sleeves and that type of stuff. You know, again, depending on the customer service.
Well, my problem, of course, is I come from a generation where when you got tattoos, it was because you were drunken in Mexico. And I know, there you go.
No, San Diego.
Okay. I know a lot of people who got really, really sick or diseased from getting from bad needles. So my first reaction, no matter how beautiful the tattoo is always, oh, I hope you're all right.
Well, I can remember, though, when we got ours in San Diego, this one guy literally got a full arm sleeve. They were almost going to bring him up on charges. And they go, what do you mean? He goes, the DI at the time says, sorry, that's destruction of government property. If you can't perform your duties, you have just destroyed government property. I could throw you in the brig. It's like, okay, never mind about that. Yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah. I have a friend who has an amazing number of tattoos. She's a beautiful woman, and the tattoos are beautiful as well. Oh. There's no question that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And she looks lovely, and they look lovely. And I know she got them in a place that's clean and that uses new needles and yada, yada, mm-hmm. yada. But I do have that immediate reaction because that's how I grew up, right? I mean,
so many
people I know got sick or got a disease.
Yeah, you
got
to make sure.
Or just got a really crappy job done on their tattoo.
Like where I go, you know, they use all these brand new needles and everything else, and it's a fantastic place. And I'm not even, you know, a second hesitation.
Right.
You know, but, yeah, you can get some other places.
There's a website I read with bad tattoos. Things that are spelled wrong. Just really bad artwork. Some of it is really interesting.
Yeah, the real problem, of course, comes when you have managed to get something, well, misspelled or whatever. So that's a bit of a problem right there.
And you gotta wonder about the argument with the tattoo artists if they noticed it was misspelled and the customer said, no, do it that way.
No, any of mine, like on my back, I've got all my four out of six of my grandchildren. They always have you look in the mirror and make sure that, you know, it's correct.
See, now we're back to that drunken Mexico part.
That's exactly right.
Oh, yeah, that looks good.
That's exactly right.
What you mean?
This was a good one, too, the flaming giraffe.
Very nice.
From Picasso. Dali painting.
It's a Dali painting. Yeah. All right, we're going to go to the phones right now. Our first caller is Zake. Where are you calling from, Zake?
Zach.
I'm sorry.
I beg your pardon. Dave can't spell, which is why they never actually ask him if his tattoos are correct. Where are you calling from, Zach?
From Brighton.
Brighton, what can we do for you?
I had a question about DSL modems. I have a DSL modem I've had, I think, almost since Frontier was offering this service, and I don't know if it's worthwhile to upgrade it to get any higher bandwidth, any higher internet speeds.
Well, generally, you can't. They have to provide it for you.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I can't just buy one off the shelf and put it, you know.
No.
Generally not.
No.
Okay.
If it's an old one, you can call them up and say you're having trouble and you would like them to replace it, and they might. But DSL speeds are based on your distance from the phone switch, and there's very little you can change about that.
It's more or less what it is.
Yeah, they wanted to charge me like $4.50 a month forever for a new one. It just doesn't seem like it's worth it if the old one's working properly.
No, if it's working, it's working. And if you're getting decent speed, then you win.
But if you say, if you say it's not working, then they have to provide you with a new one as part of your service with them, because it's included in your contract.
Yeah, but
service.
They'll test that first.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Rochester is one of the cities where the DSL router and cable router is provided by the company, and you can't just buy your own.
I know a lot of places you can, and that's led to an interesting whole third-party infrastructure of people providing those types of modems. But here in Rochester, that wouldn't work.
The irony is that most of the other cities, they don't give you a discount because you're not renting theirs. You know, say it's $40 a month if they provide the router. If you buy your own, it's still $40 a month.
Right. There's no discount. That's too bad. I guess I understand it, whatever, but it's whatever the
market will bear.
It's whatever the market will bear. That's how it works. Was it Thomas Jefferson who said, find out just how much people will stand still for, and now you know how much you can enslave them, or something along that line? Yeah. That's one of my quotes, and I have a file of 700 and change quotes that I've had going for a while. Are you telling me it's time for a break? Oh, yes, you are. Look at you. All right, now I hear the music. We are going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call. You know the numbers, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, 800-790-0415. Back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Tom Castronova. Please allow me to refresh your memory. I used to be on Mondays from 6 to 9 when I started on this station. Then I moved to Tuesdays and did this thing called Tuesdays with the Two Toms, and we featured Louis Armstrong music. Then I moved back to Monday from 6 to 9. Now I'm back on Tuesday. You got all that? So please, join me Tuesdays from 6 to 9 p.m. right here on member-supported Jazz Radio in Rochester, Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 20 years on air, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 is supported by our members and Exodus to Jazz Productions, presenting 480 East, Saturday, May 15th. Shows are at 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. at the downtown Radisson Hotel. Tickets are available at all Wegmans locations. For more information, call 733-7685, or you can visit exodustojazz.com.
I can solve difficult problems for a Fortune 500 company.
I can run a successful business.
I can put my military experience to work for your company.
I can manage your home improvements.
I can publicize your message.
I can teach your children.
But I can't put my skills to work for your organization
if I'm not given the opportunity.
Nearly 50 million Americans have disabilities. Capitalize on their talents with employment practices that benefit everyone. Learn more at whatcanyoudocampaign.org.
Be sure to join Jazz 90.1 for a live performance of the Jazz Contingent, Wednesday, May 19th from 7 to 8 p.m. The Jazz Contingent features Brian Bricco on sax, Seth Seelfon on guitar, Dave Klug on bass, and Jim Grillo on drums. The Jazz 90.1 live studio concert series continues with the Jazz Contingent, Wednesday, May 19th from 7 to 8 p.m. on Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Phil Dodd. Please join me weekdays from noon to 3 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 22 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Here's an interesting story from the news: a just-published attack tactic that bypasses the security protections of almost every current antivirus software is a very serious problem, according to an executive at one unaffected company who is has asked to remain nameless. Last Wednesday, researchers at Matusik.com outlined how attackers could exploit the kernel driver hooks that most security software use to reroute Windows system calls through their software to check for potential malicious code before it's allowed to execute. Calling the technique an argument switch attack, and a Matusik-written paper spelled out in relatively specific terms how an attacker could swap out benign code for malicious code between the moments when the security software issues a green light and the code is actually executed. This is definitely very serious, said Alfred Huger, Vice President of Engineering at Immunet, a Palo Alto, California-based antivirus company. Probably any security product running on Windows XP can be exploited this way. Let me repeat that. Probably any security product running on Windows XP can be exploited this way. Huger added that Immunet's desktop client is not vulnerable to the argument switch attacks because the company's software uses a different method to hook into the Windows kernel. According to Matusik, nearly three dozen Windows desktop security titles, including Symantec, McAfee, Trend Micro, Bitdefender, Sophos, and many others, can be exploited using the argument switch tactic. Matusik said it tested the technique on Windows XP Service Pack 3 and Vista SP1 on 32-bit machines. Some security vendors agree with Huger. It's a serious issue, and Matusik's technical findings are correct, said Mikko Hyponen, chief research officer at Finnish firm F-Secure. Matusik's research is absolutely important and significant in the short term, echoed Rick Ferguson, a senior security advisor at Trend Micro. Other antivirus companies downplayed the threat, however, not surprisingly. Huger confirmed that attackers would have to drop malware of some sort on the targeted machine in order to utilize the argument switch strategy, which, as we all know, is not that hard to do, and that there are a lot of easier ways to game antivirus, but that doesn't lessen the impact, Huger argued. Actually, it would be really tricky to stop this and gives attackers a strong opportunity to get around disk-based security. So what do you think about this new virus technique? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. And tell us how secure you feel today. It's an interesting little problem that they've got. If what happens is you hook, there are hooks in Windows, right? And the antivirus program gets into one of these hooks and says, before you execute anything, ask me. So what happens is when, let's say, Windows wants to execute a program, it says, okay, I have to execute. Oh, no way, to have to ask the antivirus program. So it asks the antivirus program. The antivirus program checks and says, okay, go ahead. During the time between the check and the okay, go ahead, which is only milliseconds, but that's a long time in computer terms, the virus then switches out the innocuous code that got checked with the virus. So instead of executing the innocuous code, you execute the virus. And the problem is there's no real way to fix that if you use those inline hooks in Windows. Now, if you don't use them and you use a different method, then you're okay because you're not, you know, you're not doing it that way.
Right, exactly.
But almost all of them do it that way. So that's an interesting little problem.
One of life's challenges. Well, you know, it's like anything else. We get so complacent, you know, in doing stuff. It's just like folks are constantly, don't take the time to read the stuff on the screen. They just go next, 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 next. And then they wonder, how did they get that on their machine?
Well, we've talked about this before and we joke about it a lot. But really what Windows has done with XP, with Vista, has trained people to say, okay.
Oh, yeah. Just because you want to quick get to and get it installed already.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. You know. And that's well, it's a problem. But what do you, you know?
I ask clients all the time, you know, well, what'd you do? No, I just went ahead and installed it. And click. And I had that one got nailed for, what was it, $39.95 for that super anti-spyware 2010.
Yeah, right. Right, which is nothing but a virus, right?
Yep.
Right now, we don't. Somebody asked in the forums, the doctor, as a matter of fact, asked which antivirus programs are not affected. We don't know right now, and the reason is most people don't publish how their software works. We know that all the major ones use the hook. I believe AVG and Avast use the hook as well, but I don't know that. We do know that it's Trend Micro and Symantec and McAfee and all of those others that I mentioned. What we don't necessarily know at this point is which ones don't use that hook. I'm fairly sure that Panda, which you actually run from online, doesn't use the hook. But other than that, I don't know.
This is similar to one of the exploit we talked about last week with the most computers now coming with dual core and even hyper threading, that one core scans the file clean and the virus is hiding in the other core.
Right. And it's the same kind of thing. It's a genuine problem that happens. I don't know what to say about that.
Don't run Windows.
Well, there's yes. I didn't want to be the one to say it, but we'll let the Mac guy say it. Interestingly, if you run a product called Clam AV, which is also available for Windows,
it is the Mac.
It is clamav.net. clamav.net. Steve will put up a link to that. The company called Immunet that I just talked about in that news story also has said that their software is not affected by this. And Clam AV is actually the result of a partnership between the Immunet Corporation and SourceFire Inc. So Clam AV is free. It does use cloud-based protection, so you'll know that it's not going to be affected because it comes down from the internet. Now, the bad news is you have to be on the internet to run it, et cetera, but if you're looking for something that's completely free and at this point is, in fact, known, then Clam AV is the product to use. All right, we're going to go back to the phones. Our next caller is Kelly. Where are you calling from, Kelly?
I'm calling from Fairport.
And how are things in Fairport?
I have a Mac question for you.
Excellent.
Okay. I am running the Symantec antivirus, and something that happens, I have weekly updates on it, but I also run scans many other times during the week. Often, I'm going to say after a restart, it seems to get stuck on a program or something that's still in there. It's entitled documents2go.sit, S-I-T. And that's something from an old Palm that I had, an old Palm Pilot I had years ago. And I cannot find that thing anywhere on the computer. And I don't know why it keeps getting stuck there. So,
now, well, when you say stuck, does it ever get past it?
It just stays there and scans it, and it will do it for hours. So I have to stop it and then restart the computer.
Well, one of the settings inside of Norton is to scan compressed files, so that's what it's doing.
Okay.
And Documents2Go is a product from DataViz. And there may be thousands of files in that compressed archive, but it shouldn't take more than a couple hours. So you can either turn off the setting to scan compressed archives, which would sort of be bad because that's where bad things can hide. Or you should be able to find that file with the find command.
And I have tried to find it under Documents2Go. Should I look for DataViz instead?
Well, why don't you search for all the SIT files?
That would work too, yeah. Doesn't I'm trying to remember last time I used Norton, it gave you the path. When it scans the file, it tells you where that file is as it's scanning it.
This one either doesn't do it or I haven't paid attention to that.
Okay. I would look for, and it could be, do you have hidden files and how do you see them?
Yeah. In the find command, you go into options and tell it to search for hidden files.
Okay.
And
it may well be
invisible,
a hidden file.
Right? It may be a system in a system file too. You can also have it search inside the system folders.
Have it search everything everywhere.
Yeah, it may. yeah, it may be inside of the program.
Sometimes
too.
That's the easiest way.
Right.
Yeah, if you still have Documents2Go in your applications folder, you can try deleting that if you don't use it anymore.
That is long gone. I went and pulled out a whole bunch of little things that were here and there. seems to be the remaining. Yeah.
So, yeah, so you didn't use an uninstaller? You just manually deleted? Probably. So it.
You know, I guess I'm not sure I can answer that right now.
Yeah, it sounds like it's when you manually deleted the program, it left something behind, probably in your library, probably in your application support folder. And the find command doesn't search in the system folders by default. You have to turn that on in the find options.
Okay. So I will try to take a look at that. And what should be an easy question, but I have tried looking for .sit files, and nothing seems to happen with that.
But were you looking for hidden files?
What folder did you start at?
Basically, I started, it just says on my Mac.
Okay.
Which includes desktop and includes...
Right. But were you searching for hidden files and system files as well?
That I don't know. Yeah.
See, that's
you can also, more detail.
You can also search the contents of a file or the file name.
Okay.
And if you search for file name, it should limit what it's finding.
Right.
But
so,
and the SIT format is a very old format and isn't used much anymore since Apple incorporated the ZIP format. Most people don't use ZIP or SIT. So
okay.
It may be that you just don't have any files outside of the system libraries.
Okay.
Right. So search everything essentially.
Okay.
All right.
And I would essentially need to do that almost on an individual basis then.
How do you mean an individual basis?
Well, is there a global way to search everything?
Yeah, from the find command.
Okay.
And you tell it to search your whole Mac, and you tell it to turn on to search for invisible files, and you tell it to search for system files.
Are those under an advanced menu somewhere, or is that directly?
It's in the there's a little add button where you add criteria.
There you go. So click the add button, add all the criteria there are, and then go have lunch.
That may not be that fast. Or slow, I mean. That was a good slip.
Famous last word. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, it's when the Spotlight indexes the hard drive ahead of time, so it searches a lot faster.
Okay.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
All right. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Enjoy
thank you.
Show.
Have fun.
Wait a minute. Who was he talking to?
He said gentlemen, but I knew he meant us because we were the only ones on the phone.
Okay.
But he was just being polite about it. You can't argue with polite.
Mm-hmm. I just searched my computer for SIT files, and the only one I found was the Windows Media Installer from 2003 and my Google search for SIT files.
Oh, yeah. And what does SIT stand for? Squeeze it?
It's stuff it.
Stuff it. That was it. I knew it was something.
Stuff It was written by a kid named Ray Lau when he was like 15 years old.
I hate those people.
And it completely obliterated all of the previous compression programs on the Mac and was the Mac standard for like 10 years until the ZIP standard from Windows got to be so popular on Windows that Apple incorporated it into the Mac as well. Because most of the files you download were zipped anyway because that's what Windows uses. Although there was a free version of the Stuffit Expander for Windows, and they still do make Stuffit available. It has a couple of neat features for dropping a folder full of stuff on the stuff icon, and it will compress it for you. It can attach to FTP servers and things, but for just general compression, that's built into the OS now.
Yeah, there's a ZIP has really kind of become universal.
Yeah.
You know, obviously it's been on the Mac, on the Windows machines forever. It's built into the Mac now. There has for decades been a version of ZIP for Linux.
I don't
Linux.
Think hardly anyone actually uses PKZIP anymore, the guy that invented the format.
Right. Phil Katz.
Phil Katz, yeah.
Yep.
Although they're probably licensing it, Windows and Apple are licensing it to embed.
Right. Somebody's licensing it from him. I know that.
Yeah.
Unless the what you call it is
the copyright may have
gone out by now. I don't know.
Gone out by now, yeah.
PKWare is still around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Still
really
selling
is.
Their program.
All right, we're going to go to the mailbox?
Yeah.
Excellent. Let's do that. You can always email us if you go to soundbites.org. You can send us an email if you can't call or whatever. So we'll start with DeVillo. From Greece, New York, who writes, I have a 40-gigabyte hard drive in my computer partitioned as follows. C equals 15 gigabytes, D equals 25 gigabytes. I would like to put a bigger hard drive into the machine and clone my existing drive. I've done some research and will probably purchase Norton Ghost to use a freeware program like HD Clone to clone the drives. My question is, should I partition the new drive before I begin the clone process, or should I do the partition procedure after I have cloned the C drive first? I need to do a clone procedure because many of my programs are very old. I probably have all the old disks, but I would never be able to do the updates that I have because the programs are no longer supported. Thanks for the help. P.S. Your advice has enabled me to help many of my friends and family members with computer problems. Well, you're welcome. Dave, what do you think? You weren't paying any attention, were you?
No, I'm not a fan of partitioning at all anymore.
He was texting somebody.
It's always annoying when your partition is full and you don't, especially like, your C drive.
Rob, stop bothering the operator, will you, for heaven's sake?
The thing of it is, though, is no, because the other thing is I was just asked to do this just this past week. I took a 500 gig hard drive and they wanted me to partition it. And with the price of hard drives, it's like, why bother partitioning it? If that hard drive goes south on you, and I've run into clients before, you know, that have done this.
Yeah.
You know, they have me partition it, and then they go to get the data back, and you say, well, no, it was on that other partition. Well, yeah, that was the D drive. It's still the same hard drive.
Yeah.
Get another hard drive. The hard drives are cheap enough.
You're backing up from C to D when it's one hard drive.
Right. In this case, what I suspect the person has done is put their data on D and their programs on C. What that leaves you with, of course, is the problem of then going into every one of your programs. If you do put them all on the C drive, you now have to put every one of your programs, go to every one of your programs and say data is no longer on D, it's on C. If you can do that, if all your programs will let you change where you find the data, then you can throw it all on one drive.
Yeah.
Otherwise, my suggestion is buy two drives.
Yeah, and the thing of it is you don't necessarily – say I've got a 500 gig hard drive as my main
drive. Which is small today.
But even if I've got a 500 gig and I get, say, even a 320, a smaller one, you don't have to worry about backing up the programs. It's just your data.
Right.
And 10-to-1 odds, data pictures and everything else – if you just back it up to
the other drive,
you're going to have plenty of room.
Now, Davila, you've got a couple of things to think about. One, if these programs are so old and you're running them under DOS or whatever, I don't know that you'll be able to put a 500 gig drive in because it may not recognize a 500 gig drive. But if you get a drive that can do that, get a fairly small drive for your get two 500 gig drives because they're about the same price anyway anymore. Get two 500 gig drives. One is C, the other one is D, right? Now, what you want to do is make sure that your C drive backup all your programs to a folder on D, and on D, back up all your data to a folder on C. That way, if one of the drive dies, you've got the other one, and you can automate that. That's easy enough to do. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Household pests are familiar subjects in childhood songs and nursery rhymes, but they can also pose serious threats to our health and property. Dealing with these threats may not be as easy as ABC, but it can be as easy as IPM. Integrated Pest Management employs common sense and sound solutions to treat and control pests. To learn more, visit whatisipm.org, a public service message from the National Pest Management Association.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, celebrating 20 years. Jazz 90.1 accepts vehicles. That's right. You can donate your unwanted vehicle to Jazz 90.1, have it picked up, and receive a tax deduction while we get cash to keep the jazz going strong on Jazz 90.1. If you would like to support Jazz 90.1 by donating your old vehicle, call 966-5299. That's 966-5299. Donating your old vehicle, another way to support Jazz 90.1.
Greece Community Broadcasting Incorporated is proud to present Art Loves Jazz 2010, a gala fundraising event to benefit Jazz 90.1. This fifth annual fundraising event will be held Thursday evening, May 20th from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. with great live jazz from Uptown Groove and the Bob Snyder Trio. There will be a silent auction, a live art auction, and great gourmet food. Art Loves Jazz 2010 will be held at Artisan Works, located at 565 Blossom Road in Rochester. Artisan Works is a not-for-profit community event space filled with art and other treasures from Rochester and around the world in its 60,000-square-foot gallery. Proceeds from Art Loves Jazz 2010 benefit Jazz 90.1. Art Loves Jazz, Thursday, May 20th. Tickets are only $30 per person and can be purchased by calling 585-966-2660. That's 966-2660. Or online at jazz901.org. Only a limited number will be sold, so get yours today.
Jazz 90.1 is supported by our members and by the Lilac Festival. Presenting Rita Coolidge, Sunday, May 16th at 7 p.m. the Sam's Club main stage at Highland Park.
Now you say you're lonely. You cried the whole night through. Well, you can cry me a river. Cry me a river.
For more information, you may visit lilacfestival.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Harris. Join me every Sunday night from 5 to 7 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Listen, I hope you were listening to that thing about Art Loves Jazz, because that's an amazing and
that's
wonderful
be,
thing.
Yeah.
It's this Thursday, May 20th, 6:30 to 9:30. Go online, get your tickets. Go online to jazz901.org. jazz901.org. Tickets are only $30. It's a great evening. Bob Schneider Trio, Uptown Groove, excellent groups. Live jazz, the silent auction, the live art auction. And if you've never been to Artisan Works, holy moly.
That is one cool place.
It really is.
Yeah.
So you ought to go. You really ought to go, because it's a way cool thing.
And then Lilac Festival is going on right now.
And Lilac Festival, I can't get home anymore. Well, it used to be whichever way I went, except down through you know, by the Lilac yep. Festival was
safe.
No, it was under construction.
Oh, well, so Monroe Avenue.
You can't go anywhere.
Monroe Avenue is a lifelong project in this city.
Yeah, well, ain't that the truth?
From one end to the other, there's right. always one part of Monroe Avenue that's always been under construction.
Right. So here we go. The circus just keeps getting better. They say all is fair in love and war, and of course, the increasingly bitter rivalry between Apple and other smartphone manufacturers is clearly devolving into a war of the litigious variety. HTC announced on Wednesday that it not only has complained to the U.S. International Trade Commission that Apple is infringing on its patents, it's gone so far as to ask for a U.S. import ban of iPhones, iPads, and iPods. Apparently, the iPhones, iPads, and iPods are not actually made in America, and so you can ban their import back to America for sale. In its announcement, HTC claims that Apple has infringed on 5 of its patents, though it doesn't tell you which ones. HTC's North American Vice President, Jason McKenzie, sidestepped the details by citing the company's long involvement in the mobile space. As the innovator of the original Windows Mobile Pocket PC phone edition in 2002 and the first Android smartphone in 2008, HTC believes the industry should be driven by healthy competition and innovation that offer consumers the best, most accessible mobile experiences possible. It is important to note, however, that while HTC's headline says that it is suing Apple, the actual announcement only mentioned that it has filed a complaint with the ITC. There's no mention of a lawsuit. HTC was certainly not unprovoked. Apple fired the first volley back in March when it sued HTC for infringing on 20 of its iPhone-related patents. Apple is also doing the lawsuit shuffle with Nokia as the Finnish phone maker took aim at Apple in December 2009 and Apple returned fire a month later. Between these two claims, both Nokia and Apple asked the ITC to ban the import of each other's pocketable gadgets. Nokia also launched a second lawsuit against Cupertino last week. Nor is Apple the only mobile operating system developer to wade into legal waters. Microsoft joined the fray last month, though, to shoot a lawsuit and entered into a licensing agreement with HTC for some of the phone manufacturer's patents. That's not very surprising, though, considering the two companies' long-standing relationship. Microsoft, it seems, was happier than Apple to make peace, not war, with HTC. So our question to you, how would you feel about an import ban on iPhones, iPods, and iPads? There's 150 Apple fanboys twitching on the floor right now, foaming at the mouth. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. I know you got something to say about this, so give us a call.
Speaking of which,
yeah.
Colin and all that, last night, you know, talking in Second Life, which should remind folks that we do every Friday night, just like we're doing here. We go on Second Life and answer people's questions. But
9 o'clock Eastern Time, 6 o'clock Linden Time.
The point was brought up, and I'm thinking, yeah, we should probably do it. June 5th, when we're going to have a couple guests, is also our birthday.
You're right, our birthday here.
Yeah, our birthday here. So I think we should do some rum balls.
I think we absolutely should do some rum balls. Dave makes rum balls for Christmas, and the three of us get very, very, very mellow on the rum balls. And if we're going to have some guests in the studio, then maybe we'll let them get mellow too.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm hat debating. Because it'll work out just right for, you know, having the guests come in and celebrating 1 year on the air.
I love that idea.
Okay.
All right. We're off to the phones. Our next caller is Gil. Where are you calling from, Gil?
Off to the phones. Our next caller is Gil. Where are you calling from, Gil?
That's me on delay.
Hello.
Hello, Gil. How are you?
Pretty good. Say we're calling from Webster, where life is worth living.
We know that. Yeah.
Maybe Francis would remind us to say that.
Francis is a very busy lady. I have to.
We pick on her so much, and we've
we
never
don't even know who she is. I don't know who she is. At this
and
point.
How long has she been in our lives?
Oh, for heaven's sake!
It's got to be at least 10 years.
At least 10 years.
At least.
I don't know who Francis is, but
God love her.
She's going to be semi-immortal. What can we do for you, Gil?
At least I've heard the Francis story. So,
right.
My question today is about. I just heard a question about the sort of disk drive replacement thing, and I've thought for quite some time now that I might replace my C drive with either one of the high-speed 10,000 RPM drives or maybe one of the new solid-state drives, and I just thought I'd get your reading on, is that really worth it?
Well, it depends on a couple of points. First, it depends on the speed of your machine. Well, it depends entirely on the motherboard of your machine. If your motherboard is fast enough to do justice to a 10K drive, and your system is fast enough to do justice to a 10K drive, then certainly you'll get a small increase in loading times. Now, that will not in any way translate to an increase in performance. The best use of 10K drives is on servers for data, for databases. Because they do a lot of drive searching. For an individual, you'll find that having a faster drive lets you load programs maybe 30 to 40% faster, assuming your system is fast enough to handle that. But it's only in the loading and in the saving of documents. The same is true of an SSD drive, but in that case, the loading and saving is ridiculously faster. You've gone to ludicrous speed. The problem is...
Just don't go to Plaid.
Exactly. The problem with SSD drives is they have a limited life. So the particularly, again, on a system where you're spending a lot of time searching the drive, or you do a lot of antivirus checking, or you do a lot of defragmenting, you're really limiting now, you're decreasing the lifespan of that drive significantly. So for a lot of the little mini laptop type machines, the netbooks and things like that, And SSD drives make sense because you want it as small and as light as possible, and an SSD drive takes a lot less of your battery than something else. But you'll find that all drives have a limited life. Of course they do. But hard drives are designed to be searched constantly. SSD drives, over-exercising them that way will kill them sooner because they all have a limited number of reads and writes. Now, that's, you know, hundreds of thousands of reads and writes. Yeah. So I wouldn't get too excited about it. But if you're the sort of person who – we had somebody last night in Second Life who reformats his SSD every couple of months just because he can. And
that's too much time.
That's going to kill it. But
So in terms of you know, on an average usage, so if you had an SSD drive, would it last, you know, how many years versus a, you know?
Well, if you don't do anything unusual to it, it'll last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, okay.
That's, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, instead of 6 or 7 years, right?
Right.
So it's not like it's going to last 2 weeks.
I typically find that the rate of drive expansion of space sort of 3 to 5 years, and I just take the old drive, put it in the box, and
right.
and I replace it with a bigger drive. And so I never have had a bad drive.
Right.
Not on everything.
Right, exactly. What I do is I usually take my smallest drive, which at this point is like 250 gig, and make that a temp drive. So all my temp files go to it. One thing that does is cause less fragmentation on the main drives. And the other thing it does is because you write to it separately and it's on a different chain, you can write to it simultaneously with everything else. So that slightly speeds up your machine.
So how do you point all your temp files to a separate drive?
Well, in Linux, it's real easy. You just say that this is where / TMP is.
Right, right. I understand.
But under Windows, you set an environment variable.
Which one?
Well, there's two. One is TEMP, all in caps.
Okay.
And the other is TMP, all in caps.
Got it.
And you can get to those settings on if you right-click on My Computer and go to Properties. There's an Environment Variable tab.
Good.
Yeah. A lot of people like SSDs for their boot drives because it makes the machine boot faster. The other side of that coin is don't reboot. But,
right.
but if you're running Windows, you got to reboot every few hours anyway.
Right.
No, actually, it's interesting because I have both an Ubuntu machine as well as a Windows machine. I read my mail on the Ubuntu machine, and I do sort of things that I want to that I don't want to get to the network, and I want to do sort of standard computing I do on the Windows machine. And the Windows machine will run for months.
Well, if you're not on the Internet with it, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And the Ubuntu machine, I actually turn that off.
Right.
Occasionally, just to save power, I guess.
Well, I have a friend who's got an Ubuntu machine with an SSD card in it. It's a little netbook, and it boots in 7 seconds.
Yeah.
From dead stop to I'm getting on the Internet now.
Well, I usually, if I have the machines turned off for some reason, like our power failure the other night, so I turn on the Windows machine and I started booting. And then in my leisure, I turn on the Ubuntu machine, and I boot that, and I finish with that, and the Windows machine at that time just about comes up. And
yep.
it's ready to complain about all the things that need to be fixed and whatever. So.
Yep.
There you go.
And
all
if,
right.
If it's worth the expense to boot in 7 seconds, I just was on Newegg, and I found a 1 terabyte SSD drive for $3,500.
Yeah, SSD drives are not cheap at this point. But again, you don't need a terabyte drive if it's just your boot drive, particularly under Linux, because you can put /boot on that one, and then that can be 10 gig, 20 gig.
Smaller one.
Yeah. So you can do that a lot cheaper. You know, call it a 20 or even 30 gig SSD card, and a 32, I guess they come in, you know, 32s and 64s and stuff. So put a 32 or a 64 in there, and that's cheap enough to boot with, and then you have something else that's your data drive. Or nowadays, you put all your data on the cloud anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're in Google Docs and you're in, you know, if you're doing, let's say you're doing Google Docs.
Sure. If you put your personality on Facebook, you can put your data on cloud and then you won't exist anymore.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Well, I, you know, a lot of the new netbooks are doing that. They come with a fairly small SSD card to save money. And they give you Google Docs and Google Mail and all of that other stuff. And so you don't need to ever really put a lot of data on your drive itself. And as long as you're somewhere where you can get to the net, and these days it's hard not to be able to get to the net, you know, if you're willing to pay the $30 a month for a Verizon card or any one of the companies have a card, then you can be on the net from anywhere for anything. And so you can, it's easy enough to do. I mean, I know a couple people who basically have put all their documents in Google Docs and all their mail in Google Mail. They can get to them from anywhere. They've got to carry around a little netbook with a cellular modem in it. And they never are without all of the data they want. So a lot of people are doing that now, and they've got small, you know, SSD drives and boot up in 7 seconds, and they're all good to go.
Yeah, very good. Well, thanks for the info.
Sure.
Keep up the good work, guys.
Have fun, Gil.
Take care.
You know, that's, we talk about it all the time, how fast we forget how thing, you know, how much time things take to do something. And for me, the biggest test is, you know, I'm so used to, you know, in the shop and that, hooking up somebody's machine and just on the internet.
Yeah.
I had actually two of them today that I had, this week that we had to test with modems.
Holy yep. cow. I can't tell you the last time I used a modem. Truly, I cannot tell you the last time.
But, you know, I mean, yes, sweet if everybody could have it, but, you know, sometimes it just doesn't always work that way.
All right, sounds to me like we're about to take a break. So we're going to do that. If you're not on the phone, I don't know why you're not. It's real easy to do. 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299. 1-800-790-0415. For Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Every Sunday evening, join me, Derek Lucas, for The Spectrum, where we find the mysterious side of jazz. Music to move your mind, body, soul, spirit, as well as help you do your homework. Every Sunday evening, 10 o'clock. You're on Jazz 90.1.
Helping you with your computer questions for over 20 years. Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of the 2010 Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
The Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America has important information for people with asthma. You know that asthma symptoms can really slow you down. What you may not know is that there are two main causes of asthma symptoms: airway constriction, which you feel, and inflammation, which you may not feel. Most medicines only treat one cause, which can be why symptoms return. At asthma.com, you'll learn more about the two main causes of asthma symptoms. You'll learn how to work with your doctor to better manage your asthma. And you'll learn how treating both main causes of asthma symptoms can help prevent symptoms before they even start. And preventing asthma symptoms should be your treatment goal. For more information and resources about the two main causes of asthma symptoms, go to asthma.com. This message brought to you by the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America, with funding and editorial support by GlaxoSmithKline.
Jazz 90.1 appreciates your support through membership. But did you know you can support Jazz 90.1 in other ways as well? For example, by donating your old vehicle. When you donate your old vehicle to Jazz 90.1, we receive cash and you get the tax deduction. We even come pick it up. To find out more, call 966-5299. When the time comes to change vehicles, think of Jazz 90.1 and call 966-5299.
For the millions living with COPD, breathing becomes a real struggle. COPD is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. You may have heard of it as chronic bronchitis or emphysema. Over time, you feel like you're breathing through a straw. It's the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S., and it took my grandmother. If you're over 35 and have ever smoked, you could be at risk. Good news is, you can improve your symptoms. I'm Danica Patrick, and I drive for COPD. Join the movement at driveforcopd.com. Take our screening questionnaire today and talk to your doctor.
Jazz 90.1 is supported by our members and Agape Physical Therapy. Agape Physical Therapy offers aquatic therapy at their Brockport location, the Gates-Chile Hidden Valley Pool, and the Webster Aquatic Center. Using the Bredenko method of using water as physical therapy, Agape provides shallow and deep water exercise areas for partial and non-weight-bearing activities. Agape Physical Therapy's experienced staff offers constant care in treating the young and the young at heart, non-athletes and athletes. For more information about Agape Physical Therapy, you may call 637-0790 or visit agapephysicaltherapy.com.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Hold on a second here.
Harry Legmon, for you folks don't know that voice. What's cooking?
Sorry, I was just trying to send mail back to Rob. Rob forwarded me an email from someone who will remain nameless, who wanted to know if we were going to be participating next May 10th. We missed it this year.
What did we miss?
World No Pants Subway Riding Day. Yes.
Huh?
Yes. The day when people all over the world ride the subway not wearing pants.
Shorts?
Not wearing pants.
Shorts?
Of any sort.
American pants or British pants? Because
world pants.
No, pants mean something different in
I
Britain.
I understand that, but this is
why
this
is Rob going to wear the Soundbites thong?
It's what we call underpants.
And, exactly, and in Buffalo, this is a well known thing, and they're doing it. They do it every year. They did it this year. They did it last year. And this person is suggesting yes, we wear a thong. Hopefully, it would be the Soundbites thong. And then the official,
and we're not signing it,
the official Star Trek dress uniform tunic,
a scant, which is a male skirt.
No, that would be a mert.
I know. Well, I have Scottish friends.
Or a kilt.
Okay. Yeah. You wear your kilt.
And you go commando.
Your everyday kilt you or, go, your, yeah, or your
but
good
I,
kilt?
No, I know Nick can do it because I've seen
because
him in a dress.
Because you're a real Scotsman.
I have great cams.
You do. I've
do.
Seen you in a dress. So
I look good in a dress. But in this particular case, it would be a kilt and you would go regimental. How do you go on regimental, laddie? All right.
Well, that's where Lazarus kept his blasters. Lazarus Long in his kilt?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
TMI.
Yeah.
All three of them.
All right, we're way past where we should be at this point, so I'll just go on with a news item. On Thursday, Facebook, God bless them, took the wraps off of two new security features aimed at protecting users from phishers and other online scammers. At Facebook, we're constantly working on new ways to protect you from scams and help you keep your account and information secure, wrote Lev Popov, a Facebook software engineer, in a blog post late on Thursday afternoon. Today, we're announcing some new tools and systems designed to keep the bad guys out and keep you abreast of suspicious activity so you can quickly take action to correct it, Popov wrote. One of the new features, now available to all Facebook users, is designed to allow users to approve the devices they use to log in and then be notified whenever their account is accessed from a device they haven't approved. You can find that under account settings. For instance, if you list your work desktop, your laptop, and your iPhone, and someone tries to log onto your page from a different machine, security will be triggered. Users will be notified that another system has been used to try to access your account and how to reset your password and whatever. They're also taking steps to block suspicious logins. So, for example, they might ask you for your birth date or to identify a friend in a photo, answer a security question, if you've provided one. So they're designed to make it easier for you and harder for the bad guys. Announcement does not appear to be related to the security company meeting that we talked about, which was also called for Thursday, to discuss their recent privacy issues. A Facebook spokes individual said the company will hold a meeting to discuss privacy concerns raised by individuals and lawmakers, but he would not say whether the executives are looking to make changes to the site's highly contentious privacy policy. So is this just a matter of the pot calling the kettle black? If Facebook has all these lack of privacy features inside the product, why would they care if someone else gets at them? They're designed to show to everybody. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yep. Do these anti-spam features make you feel better toward Facebook? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free from anywhere in the world, 1-800-790-0415, with or without pants.
Definitely pants.
On the phone.
No, what I was going to say is one of the other things that I got an IM from was Golda was saying that she evidently put the stream up over there on Dreams for folks to stream the show there to listen to.
Well, in that case, welcome to every single person wandering about in Dreams, doing the build, whatever it is you're about.
They can tune in, and she's got it on the stream there. Then they're actually listening to sound bites.
And, well, they should be.
Yeah.
I just I opened the new version of Thunderbird to check the email. Wow, it's different. Wow.
What version? Do you...
3. Something or other. I don't know. Hold on a second.
It must have just come out because I haven't.
3.0.4. Mm. Yeah, 3.0.4.
Just like to mess it up every now and then.
It's got tabs. It opened up. One of the tabs opened up, and of course. The tab that it opened was, I'll come over and see the tabs now.
We're racing over, yeah. Ooh, hold on, a tab. Right? Never seen a tab before.
Let's get a new tab. I don't know how to get, when I open a message. So, for example, if I open Rob's message, it actually opens in a whole new tab.
A tab rather than a window.
Yeah.
So you don't have all those windows cluttering up your screen.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's all opening up in a new tab. So it's kind of an interesting thing. I don't know that I'm that excited about it. As with anything new, it takes getting used to. I thought I had opened up the browser because one of the tabs opened up in a browser window to talk about the new features. And I thought, well, where's Thunderbird?
Well, that's what I like about Firefox. I've got the colored tabs for all the different windows that I use constantly. I love that feature. You know, just go across. I must have at least 10 going across. They came up with a new feature, colored tabs, so they're pastels.
That's an add-in.
Yeah, and it just makes life so easy because if I'm going to, say, two of my distributors' tabs, I can go there or go to the online banking, or if I got to do up a quote, I've got Word, you know, I can do cutting and pasting with the twin screens.
Yep.
Still like to do twin 30s.
my head minion Dave has two 28-inch monitors and two 17s hooked up to his machine.
I got twin 22s. I'm almost thinking on the other machine do twin 30s.
I've seen some of the flight sim guys will do three monitors in front and one behind them, so they literally have to turn around to see what's behind them on their flight sim.
Shouldn't. When they look back, shouldn't they see a headrest?
Yeah, behind the headrest.
Oh, I see. All right. I was confused there for a moment.
Or the back of your head.
Right. Yeah.
Right. If it's looking forward.
All right. Yeah, we had, we do love our monitors, don't we? The larger the better, and seeing more stuff is always good.
You can get so much. I mean, right now, the twin 22s are working good for me because I can sit there and have so much stuff open. And, you know, whereas before I was just working with a 17-inch monitor, I find it very hard now when I'm trying to do any of this stuff. It's like, no.
That's why I like the multiple desktops that you can have in Linux and in the Mac, as a matter of fact. So I can have my mail on one, my browser on another, whatever. And it's very rare that I really need to look at two simultaneously, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, alt one, alt two, alt three, alt four.
Yeah.
I have
toggle between
work. I've got eight desktops, so I rarely use more than four or five.
Well, I've got one client that has literally six monitors. He's a day trader.
Oh, see, yeah.
He's got four stuff going across the top, which he's got his different screens, and then he's got the other two together on the lower part of the desk. He had this desk, you know, custom made. It literally comes around like a half moon, and he can sit there and be constantly scanning the four screens up above versus the other two. Again, he's doing like I did, putting the two together and opening all kinds of stuff in there. It's like he just totally zones out. I've been asking him questions.
Yeah.
You just see his eyes moving around. Fred, time out here for a minute. Oh, yeah. I was just checking on something.
Yeah.
And then I'll start asking him, and all of a sudden I notice.
He's back to it. He's addicted.
Yeah, he just sucked him on in.
Now, I'll tell you what. Last night I was at work. The other night I was at work fairly late. I had a meeting, a late meeting. So I was sitting in my office waiting for it to start, and I thought, I have to see what it looks like on this monitor because I've got a big 32-inch monitor as well. I just have one, though. So
that's what started one.
Exactly.
Two can go next to it.
Yeah, I know it. So I loaded up a program called, I don't even know how to pronounce it properly, I'm sure. It's NexWiz, NexUiz, and it's a first-person shooter. And it's available for Linux and Windows and the Mac. And I actually had motion sickness. Played it for a few minutes, but I mean, I really, it was so big and so clear and so much of my vision.
What's the resolution on that screen?
I'm running right now at 1920 by 1200.
A lot by a lot.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. And it ran beautifully. I mean, it was fast because I have a very high-end video card and et cetera, but dag nabbit. It was, I really had motions. I mean, I can play it at home on my, 19-inch monitor, and if I play for half an hour, 45 minutes, I feel it. A little bit, but when I played it on that 32-inch, I couldn't have played for more than 10 minutes at the most, really. And I was actually lightheaded and a little sick to my stomach.
It's one of the neat things about the new 27-inch iMac. It runs at 2560 by 1440 at 27 inches, and it's just a huge, expansive desktop. A lot of people are using it for their television and their computer, home entertainment center, combining everything into one thing. It's just such a
Now, see,
a
that's
nice,
something
big
I would
monitor.
Never do because I want to watch television while I'm working.
It can be a window while you're doing other things.
But you don't
need two monitors on your desk.
I have a television and a monitor.
That's because we're old. We have multiple monitors on our desks already.
Well, I've got two monitors and a TV off to the side.
See? But I don't know. I love the game is fun. It's hard too. Harder than Alien Arena. I'm not a big game player. But I figured that's about the highest resolution or highest use of the graphics that I had available to me at the moment. So I ran it. It was quite astonishing.
Well, I'm hoping this weekend next week, is finally get my other machine over to Windows 7 because I finally upped it to 4 gig of memory in it. Of course, with the XP, it's only seeing the 3. And I know once I go to 64-bit, it's going to improve the performance.
Now, see, let me say that's a great segue for this next question. Very good. Pam from Avon clearly has not been listening to the show. You've probably talked this to death, but I haven't heard it on the show. Should I upgrade to Windows 7? I have a Vista laptop, which I bought with the upgrade in September. You're patient. I have the disk a short time ago. I have the disk and I'm probably ready to go, but since I understand it's a no going back option, I'm really hesitant. How has Windows 7 shaken down since its intro? Is it worth it if I've been happy with Vista? First, how can you be happy with Vista? That's one story.
If she is happy with Vista, she is going to be overwhelmed with Windows 7. Literally, it just runs so much cleaner. Doesn't nag the hell out of you. You can do, more things are compatible with Windows 7 than they were with Vista. Whereas Vista, if you try to get an old printer, sit there and say, well, it should work, and then usually doesn't.
Right.
And older programs, again, they just all work. And I know some folks say, well, sometimes, the backwards compatibility is holding us back. Well, yes, maybe that is true. I won't deny that. Sometimes the features are going, but you know what? Some of these old programs, and for folks, they can't hit, just getting a new machine and then just turn around and say, oh, you got to get all new software too?
Right.
They can't. And there's going to be other programs that companies just can't, afford just to automatically replace.
I can't run Windows 7 on my P90 with the 128 RAM. I put the extra RAM in it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking last week, we've had several people who've called up and said, I still run DOS programs.
Oh, yeah.
And they're having trouble supporting them. One thing they ought to think about trying is install Linux on the machine and run a program called DOS EMU, DOS Emulator, DOS EMU. It's a virtual x86 machine. It's essentially a virtual PC, and it's a color text, full built-in keyboard, graphics capability, DPMI support. You can even run Doom on it, CD-ROM support. It's just an interesting thought. You could run VirtualBox and FreeDOS. Yeah, you could run DOSBox. It's just another option.
Yeah, there's other options. Well, I have a client that is still running, believe it or not, Windows WordPerfect 5.1.
Yep, great product.
I mean, you know, it does what he wants it to do. You know, because there's just he's a lawyer and it's simple boilerplates and everything else. And for a little bit of work, he's semi-retired. He goes, "Why should I go and get anything new?" I mean, he's got a newer box, and I've got it running in a DOS window.
Right.
And, you know, I set it all up for him. He goes, but for the little bit of work I do, he, you know, works a couple days, maybe a week, but the new system is working for him, and he's able to get his emails and do his browsing and everything else that he loves to do. But he goes, I don't want to go and pay for a whole nother product. I've used this for so many years. He says, I'm comfortable with it.
Right. And we've got people in the IRC chat at Pound Soundbites. Asking about, you know, is that better than DOSBox or VirtualBox or FreeDOS? VirtualBox adds another layer, VMware and VirtualBox add another layer that you don't need to add with either DOSBox or DOSMU. DOSBox is really kind of targeted toward games, so it does better with graphics and a little worse with a couple of other things. DOSMU is just a straightforward DOS emulator. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
The Pithide Room, Ship's Paradise, The Cotton Club, Shalimar, Jinx and Jones, Indigo's, Ben Keaton's, The Oak Tree Lounge, Top of the Plaza, Round Towner, The Pine Grill, The Glass Onion. Those are places that we all love, but they're really not in the past. The doctor keeps them from being just a memory. Hi, I'm Paul Kiley. Join me every Monday morning from 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. following the Spectrum for Jazz Overnight on your member-supported 24-hour jazz station, Jazz 90.1 and Jazz901.org.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, the answer to your computer questions on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 is supported by our members and by the Lilac Festival, presenting Rita Coolidge, Sunday, May 16th at 7 p.m. at the Sam's Club main stage at Highland Park.
Now you say you're lonely, you cried the
For more information, you may visit lilacfestival.com.
Paralyzed Veterans of America salutes those who've served and given the ultimate sacrifice for our freedoms. Each day we honor their memory through our work to expand freedom and independence for veterans with disabilities so they can fully live the lives they deserve. Through our new campaign, Mission Able, we're enlisting all Americans, citizens, communities, and companies to help us help veterans receive what they need most. Care, benefits, and jobs.
Join our mission at mission-able.com, a public service from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Jazz 90.1 is supported by our members and Exodus to Jazz Productions, presenting 480 East, Saturday, May 15th. Shows are at 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. at the Downtown Radisson Hotel. Tickets are available at all Wegmans locations. For more information, call 733-7685 or you can visit exodustojazz.com.
Hi, I'm Linda Wildman. Please join me middays, 10 to noon on Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 22 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. I say let's go right to the phones. We've got Dennis on the line. Where are you calling from, Dennis?
I'm calling from Henrietta.
And what can we do for you?
Well, I'd like to take a shot at the trivia.
Sure, go ahead.
Is the answer Ada Lovelace?
Very good. Excellent. And if we'd had a question, which was, for example, who's the first programmer, you would have won.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Congratulations.
I had another question.
Okay.
So I've got a lot of people that I talk to, and I find that when I'm describing things like bytes, kilobytes, megabytes, gigabytes, and terabytes, their eyes completely glaze over. So as a guy who works for an educational institution, Nick, how do you or how have you heard it best explained to people that don't understand the difference?
What I tend to do is explain to people who really are not geek types, right?
Right.
What I explain to them is RAM, you think of a hard drive as your file cabinet, mm-hmm. and you think of RAM as your desktop. And the kilo, mega, tera, etc., is the size of the desk. So you can get a very small desk, and that so you get a small, medium, or large, and that's kilo, mega, tera.
Okay. Do you have a mnemonic or anything else that you use to help people keep straight which one is bigger than another?
No, I don't. I just tell them to learn Latin and Greek. Well, if you want a mnemonic, it's kilo is kind of big, mega is mighty big, and tera is tremendously big.
That sounds like a winner.
I forgot giga.
Giga is great big.
Ginormous.
Enormous.
And then petabyte, that's pretty awful big.
That's pretty awful big.
Pretty awful big.
But basically there's, you know, and that's how I describe it. So you know which is your desk and which is your file cabinet, and the bigger the better, right? So if you visualize it, you know, right now desktops are in the gigabyte range. So let's say you have a 2 gigabyte desktop, right? Or a 4 gigabyte desktop. Well, you want at least 100 times more than that in storage in your file cabinet, so you want a 200 gigabyte or 400 gigabyte hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get, you know, 100 times that, now you've got terabyte-sized file cabinets. And people can envision a desktop, something 100 times bigger and something 1,000 times bigger.
Okay.
That's the best way I've found so far.
4 drawers, 8 drawers, 10 drawers.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds great.
You know, a wall of them, that's the best I can do.
Well, that's the same with me. I sit there and, you know, describe it as, excuse me, as a, you know, the file cabinet is the hard drive, and the memory is more or less like a dance floor. You know, how big of a crowd can you fit on it? You know, small little room, or, you know, the more memory, the bigger the dance floor, the more folks you can get on it and move around.
And then there's the games that the PC manufacturers play when they're selling things. You know, you'll get 1 gig of RAM and a 500 gig hard drive, or 4 gigs of RAM and a 100 gig hard drive.
Right.
Mix it back and forth to try to, you know, make it cheaper.
Right, and that
confuses more people. You know, I want the computer for $399. Well, that doesn't have enough storage space on it.
Right. And then, of course, people get confused. If you're running 32-bit Windows, don't bother getting anything more than 3 gig of RAM. If you're running 64-bit Windows, don't get anything less than 4 gig of RAM.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, it goes on and on and on, and that's why there's people like Dave and Steve. When you want to know what to do, you go to these guys, reputable vendors, who can then lead you to the right solution without leading you down the garden path. That's what that's all about. All right, here's another... news item, the war of words between Microsoft and Google.
Were we all done with that?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, were we
Thanks,
done?
Dennis.
I think we were done. Thanks, Dennis. I guess we were done with him. I thought he had already hung up.
No,
I apologize,
he was still
to Dennis.
Hanging on our every word.
I apologize, Dennis. I thought you were already gone. You were so quiet. You were like a little mouse just sitting there listening. A fly on the wall. A non-voice on the phone. The war of words between Microsoft and Google over Office 2010 and its entry into online cloud-based applications heated up on Thursday as the companies again took pot shots at each other. One analyst said Microsoft was publicly arguing with Google both to preserve its current position and its future in the enterprise application and collaboration markets. On Wednesday, a Microsoft executive hammered Google for a Tuesday sales pitch from Google that urged Office users to put off upgrading to Office 2010 and instead add Google Docs as an online complement to older versions of the leading Office productivity suite. Calling Google's claim simply not true, Alex Payne, director of Microsoft's online product management team, countered a Google director's pitch that Google Docs, the search company's online application suite, makes Office 2003 and 2007 better.
It takes a lot. It says a lot about Microsoft's approach to customer lock-in that the company touts its proprietary document format.
It says a lot about Microsoft's approach to customer lock-in that the company touts its proprietary document formats, which only Microsoft software can render with true fidelity, as the reason to avoid using other products, Google said. Google was talking about Payne's announcement, argument Tuesday, that only Office 2010 and accompanying Office web apps online components were able to handle so-called round-tripping, a phrase that describes moving a document from Office on the desktop to an online app and then back again without losing important document formatting or content. We've made a lot of progress in our new editors to improve the experience of importing Office documents into Google Docs, and there's more to come, promised Google, referring to its plans to integrate technologies from Docverse, a maker of Office plugins for online real-time collaboration. Google acquired Docverse in early March. Microsoft did not take Google's counterpunch without swinging back.
This is about how Google has chosen to implement features, not file formats, argued Payne in an email. Microsoft supports multiple ISO standards for file formats, and they are fully and openly documented. But Google simply chooses not to implement certain features, which results in poor document fidelity.
It's my favorite part. Let me read that piece of this first piece of it without the fake voice. This is how Google has chosen to implement features, not file formats. Microsoft is admitting they have no features you're interested in, just a file format. Is this nuts or what? Nuts. What Microsoft is saying is, yes, there are more features in Google Docs, but they don't use our file format, so they're crap. What Google is saying is, you write the document on the web, you leave it on the web, you use it on the web. Who cares what the file format is?
Oh, yeah, why should it? Yep.
So we BSD. Ask.
And that's the big thing we hear all the time. I need a Word file. Why?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going, and this is the thing, and this is the thing that bothers me about everybody. When Microsoft says something, they accept the argument. Don't let Microsoft frame the argument, frame the discussion. Look, if all Microsoft has to offer is a file format, then I'm sorry for you, Microsoft, but you have already lost. If what's important is the document itself, being able to collaborate on it, to share it with people, to send it to somebody else, to get them to see it, to get them to edit it, to get them to play with it, and you can do that all online for free without needing any component on your machine.
What's the big deal?
Then Google wins. So, for example, if I'm sitting on my desktop and I write a document in Google Docs, I can now go edit that document on my laptop. I can go edit that document on my machine at work. I can go edit that document on my netbook. I can go edit that document on my phone. I can go edit that document anywhere I am.
Doesn't matter.
If I'm on Microsoft's products, I have to have a copy of Office 2010 on each and every one of those machines. That's $400 or $700 a pop, and that's what Microsoft is looking for. But why would I want to do that when I can do it for free with Google Docs?
Well, that's where we've also been saying with OpenOffice.
Yep.
I mean,
OpenOffice is free.
Yeah, and OpenOffice, you can sit there, because you do it all the time, and I've gotten in the habit of doing it, is creating something in the Word doc, the RTF, and you can just send it to anybody. It doesn't matter whether you're using WordPerfect, Word, whatever. They can open it. It doesn't have to know, oh, it was just a Microsoft product, and I can't do it. As a matter of fact, I had one client was creating in Word 2007, you know, and they got that new DOCX file.
Yep, the X format, yep.
the client is saying, I can't open these files. Yeah, because they're forcing you to go up and get version 2010. He goes, I don't want to, you know. I put on Open Office. He did, and he was able to open it up.
We hear that a lot in the Mac community when, because Microsoft Word isn't that as big a format. You know, Apple Works and some of Apple's other programs are bigger. People are always being told, oh, I can't open your file because you have a Mac. No,
it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter what computer you have. It matters what program you have.
Right.
Well, if I gave you a WordPerfect file, you couldn't open it unless you had WordPerfect.
Listen, if I've got Microsoft Word or OpenOffice or NeoOffice or Abbey Word or WordPerfect or any one of 100 other programs, and I save all my documents in RTF format, you can open them with any one of those programs and 100 more. Not a big deal. If I use Google Docs, same thing. If I give you the link, you can edit it right online. You don't need anything on your machine. That's why I can edit documents from my phone. Thank you very much.
I got to admit, though, by making that recommendation one time to a client of mine for doing OpenOffice, because I saved them so much, they sent me one of those edible, you know, the EDs edible, you know, the fruit thing.
Oh, yeah.
Got one of those big baskets. You saved me so much money.
Hundreds and hundreds of dollars, absolutely. And these days, cheese and crackers, why would you spend money you don't have to?
Yeah.
Try OpenOffice, try Google Docs, whichever you prefer. If you don't like it, you've only lost a day or two. And then you can go out and spend
$400. $400 and be stuck with, you know, something else. And again, if you pass it on to somebody, you don't save it correctly. Anybody else that doesn't have that current version, if you don't save your Word documents in the old Word document, you can. But, you know, the default is to the DOCX.
And I can't tell you how many times people say, I've got a corrupted document, Word won't open it anymore, what can I do?
Yep.
The answer used to be, oh, well, now I just open it up in Office. And what Office does is it ignores the corrupted section and opens up what was before and what was after. So maybe some stuff is garbled a little bit. Maybe you got to redo a section in the middle. But at least you've saved most of it. Hey, what do you people think? Give us a call, for Pete's sake. Let's talk about this. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Give us a call. Anybody out there actually supporting Microsoft's document formats as the main reason to spend hundreds of dollars for an Office suite? Give us a call. Let us know.
Wasn't the point of the DocX format, the OpenXML, to be an open format?
Well, yeah, except, of course, it isn't. What they've done is they've attempted to corrupt the open format process in order to do what they want to do. And what everybody else is saying is, you know what? The heck with you.
Yeah.
Or perhaps even stronger language, as far as I don't know that. But the heck with you. What we want is to be able to share documents with anybody, anywhere, anytime.
Well, and if they would just buy the new version of Office, we wouldn't have this problem.
Exactly right. And nowadays, when people can't afford their mortgages and their car payments, why should I say, you know what, if you want to share a document with me, you have to spend $400 or $700
not happening.
On software? Yeah, I don't think so. That's a house payment. That's a car payment.
Yeah.
Forget about it. What you do is you get a free Gmail account, and suddenly you have Google Docs, and I can share the document with you. You can open it up. We can collaborate live online if you want to and produce a document to send out.
Yep.
How is that a bad thing?
No, and you're saving so much money.
And if you want to do the few things that Docs doesn't do, like make a poster.
Well, also,
you can still do that even, you know, in it. But, okay, let's say you feel you can't and you have to have a PowerPoint-like presentation. Then download OpenOffice. It's free and includes a word processor and a spreadsheet and a presentation package like PowerPoint. And you can do any of that stuff you want to do. Does it take a little bit of work to learn it? Yes, but you're saving $700. Okay, we're going to go back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim. Where are you calling from, Jim?
Nashville.
Nashville?
Nashua, New Hampshire.
Nashua, New Hampshire. And how are things Woo-hoo! In lovely Nashua, Jim?
Sunny and windy, about 65 degrees out.
Okay, we hate you. Just so you know, that's all there is to it. What can we do for you today?
Well, I talked to you last night on Sex Life. The guy with the have the icon problem or the folder problem rather.
Yeah.
And so now all he has to do is go to Tools, Folder Options, and then hit the button that says Restore Defaults, and he'll be all right.
because there's a box inside in there that says you open each one up in its own thing, whatever it is. That they want
walking chew gum at the same time.
Oh, this is from the fellow last night in Second Life.
Yep. Yeah, sometimes it's you can accidentally remove buttons and commands from the toolbars and not know how to get them back. And so quite often the programs will have a restore default option.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you have an icon that's disappearing, I think.
Yeah.
What I do is, I found this out when I had Windows 2000. Once in a while, some of my icons would disappear. I click on, right-click on the desktop, and have it lock the icons on the desktop.
Right, you can do that. You can have it lock icons, absolutely.
And it, I have no icons disappearing since then.
Now, was that Bonnie, Bon Vibra?
And
no, couldn't have been. He's on a Windows machine.
Yeah, he's on a Mac.
He's on a Mac, I mean. An open office, yeah?
Yeah, open office is a lot better. I know it's free. Because I got a boss who's been using Windows for, good grief, years and years, where I work right now, and I told her about Open Office, and about 6 months later, I asked her, we'll get Open Office. I have it at home. Okay, just sent me, she's tried it. I said, which one do you like better? She goes, Open Office.
Yep.
But because this is a state office, a Department of Health and Human Services, they can't use Open Office.
Right.
So, kind of stuck with what they got. She prefers it better. She's been doing this for about 15, 20 years now, so.
You know,
she likes Open Office. You know,
a lot of people like it. It's easy, it's simple, it's powerful. It does everything 99.9% of the world needs to do in documents and spreadsheets and presentations, and it's free.
Yeah, the other thing about it is that there's like Avery Labels. I got Avery Labels under the Open Office. I had to get Microsoft Word so I could print Avery Labels up. Avery only worked with Microsoft Word.
Yep.
That's one of the hang-ups you have.
Yeah, like I said, most things you can do, there are a couple of things that are still, Microsoft paid Avery to write the formats for them, to write the stuff for them, and they worked with them. And I understand that. That's one of the things that it doesn't do as well.
Well, Avery's got their own free program you can use for labels.
Right.
Which is nice, too.
Yeah, right. But that program works with Microsoft Word.
Right.
That's where the hang-up comes in.
Yep. All right, Jim, thanks. We got to take a break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
All right.
Have fun with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour. You continue, for some unknown reason, to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Otto Bruno, inviting you to a musical party this and every week on the Sunday Music Festa and the Otto Show. Our guests may include Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Bing Crosby, Rosemary Clooney, or who knows, maybe even Count Basie or Joe Williams, Bobby Darin. Lady Ella herself could stop by. It's a musical celebration every week on the Sunday Music Festa and the Otto Show. That's Sundays at 12 noon right here on Jazz 90.1.
Sound Bites, celebrating 20 years. Be sure to join Jazz 90.1 for a live performance of the Jazz Contingent, Wednesday, May 19th from 7 to 8 p.m. The Jazz Contingent features Brian Bricco on sax, Seth Seelfon on guitar, Dave Klug on bass, and Jim Grillo on drums. The Jazz 90.1 Live Studio Concert Series continues with the Jazz Contingent, Wednesday, May 19th from 7 to 8 p.m. on Jazz 90.1.
Hey, honey, she's all fixed. Want to go for a spin?
Sure. Honey, what's that in the back seat?
Oh, that's just the 22 pieces I had left over.
Time for a new vehicle? Well, Jazz 90.1 would love to have your old one. Just call 966-5299. Jazz 90.1 will pick it up, plus you'll get a tax deduction.
Is that 966-5299?
Yes. Donate your old vehicle to Jazz 90.1.
Honey?
I'm already dialing.
Greece Community Broadcasting Incorporated is proud to present Art Loves Jazz 2010, a gala fundraising event to benefit Jazz 90.1. This fifth annual fundraising event will be held Thursday evening, May 20th from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. with great live jazz from Uptown Groove and the Bob Snyder Trio. There will be a silent auction, a live art auction, and great gourmet food. Art Loves Jazz 2010 will be held at Artisan Works, located at 565 Blossom Road in Rochester. Artisan Works is a not-for-profit community event space filled with art and other treasures from Rochester and around the world in its 60,000-square-foot gallery. Proceeds from Art Loves Jazz 2010 benefit Jazz 90.1. Art Loves Jazz, Thursday, May 20th. Tickets are only $30 per person and can be purchased by calling 585-966-2660. That's 966-2660. Or online at jazz901.org. Only a limited number will be sold, so get yours today.
Hey, this is Derek Lucas, host of The Spectrum. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. I'm just playing with the new Thunderbird and discovering that it's making me insanely crazy at this moment. I'm sure that it'll get better as time goes on because I am ever the optimist. All right. Let's take one more news item here. A shortage of the latest Intel laptop PC microprocessors worsened in April, but the chip giant says it will meet demand by the end of this quarter. The shortfall comes at a bad time for PC vendors because laptops have been selling briskly so far this year, and analysts say the shortage has likely caused some companies to delay the rollout of new models. The shortage involves the same chips analysts and companies fretted about last month, Intel's Arendelle laptop microprocessors, including some Core i3 and Core i5 chips. We saw the full force of Intel Arendelle shortage in April, said U.S. chip distributor Converge in a monthly, or Converge, I suppose, in a monthly research report. Intel is ramping up production of the new 32-nanometer chip technology to help battle this shortage. The technology gives it the ability to produce chips in greater volumes. With regard to meeting demand on our popular Core products, we are planning to meet demand by the end of the quarter, said Nick Jacobs, an Intel spokes individual based in Singapore. Intel's Arendelle processors are designed so PC vendors can create slimmer laptops. They come in a two-chip package that includes the Arendelle processing core, made using 32-nanometer production technology, and a graphics processor made using 45-nanometer technology. Some companies have adapted to the shortage by using older Intel laptop chips in their devices, but one executive, who asked not to be named, said that's a losing strategy. People always want the latest technology. They will make sure they are getting the newest chips so they won't buy the laptop. Analysts say strong demand is more to blame than Intel for the shortage. Intel had planned to start shipping the new Arendelle chips in the first quarter, normally a slow time for PC sales because consumers in the West ease back on purchases after the holiday. But this year, demand was far more robust than normal. So our question to you, do you need the latest and greatest when you buy a new computer? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. We're going to go back to the phone and we're going to talk to Gil. Is this Gil from Webster back again or a different Gil?
I couldn't resist calling back.
Sure.
Well, you asked for comments on sort of Microsoft's file formats and so forth and so on. And
right.
I'm far from a defender of any of Microsoft, IBM, whatever, as being the end all, be all for whatever, but I just couldn't resist pointing out that Microsoft has probably given us one of the greatest presents we could ask for in computing, in the sense that these file formats, the operating system restrictions, and so forth and so on, give us basically a target that allowed other vendors to come in and make all kinds of products that we can now buy, and we can say, oh, look, this one's free and that one's free, and it works, and they all work with the same format. But it was because somebody like Microsoft came along, was big enough to establish a format that everybody could use and everybody would shoot at, and all the lesser vendors would say, oh, great, let's do that. And it's sort of the same thing with the PC. I mean, IBM came along and introduced this PC, and then sort of vendors picked it up because it was a big thing. And then suddenly, you know, IBM becomes the odd man out. IBM isn't the major vendor in PC world anymore. But fundamentally, they established that standard that allowed
right.
us, you know, they gave us another big gift. They established that standard that allowed
that
us.
That hardware standard.
Yeah, the 800-pound yeah. gorilla that sets the standard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I completely.
So, I mean, you know, on one hand, you know, they become the odd man out, but in a way, it's really funny because we get what we choose. I mean, we've done this. We collectively have done this to so many different kinds of, you know, big standard setters and so forth. I mean, I can recall being a ham radio operator in the dim past. You know, we used to go into dealers and look at the stuff on the shelves and then buy from the mail order because it was cheaper. And
right.
what happened? Well, all the dealers went out of business.
Yep.
And, you know, we picked up the PC and we used it and so forth, and we looked at it and we said, oh, that's really good. And then, you know, IBM didn't go out of business, but they certainly got pushed to the background. And, you know, we're doing that to Microsoft now. And, you know, on one hand, they're the, you know, the big enemy in the sky. But on the other hand, I just want to give them fair share to say, you know, that in truth, a lot of these big monoliths of the past have given us a great gift that.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Microsoft, the industry would not be as far ahead as it is today had Microsoft not picked up the ball and run. And I completely agree with that. I'm not saying bad things about Microsoft in general. I think framing the debate with Google in the form of you aren't using our formats is kind of stupid on their part. But that doesn't take away from the fact that they've done amazing things in the industry. I absolutely agree.
Well, it's also the case that inside of a big company, the mindset of the past fades much more slowly than outside the company. So, you know, yep. the mindset inside of Microsoft probably is a lot more in the past, and those file formats are the things that got people promoted and whatever else. And
well, and look how long it took Microsoft to get the Internet. I agree. I completely agree. Thanks, Gil.
Okay, take care.
I completely agree. Thanks. Our next caller, I'm going to guess that no matter what it actually says here, I'm going to guess that our next caller is probably Ernesto. How close am I?
Mm-hmm. Ernesto is usually spelled with an E, though.
And an R. There'll be an R in Ernesto.
No, it's E-R-N-E-S-T-O.
Right.
Yep. Which is
I'm not even going to tell you what Dave wrote here. This is a
hey. Remember,
for all I know, this was actually the name of some oil company. Where are you calling from, Ernesto?
Parrington.
All right. Remember,
I'm sorry. Where?
I control the board.
Parrington.
Parrington. Okay. What can we do for you?
Yeah. Listen. I'm trying to get the flash. I have an EEPC and ASUS, and I'm trying to get the flash player to work with Firefox, but I can't. I don't know which one to download. I go to the Adobe site. And they got several versions
yeah.
here. I'm not sure which one I'm supposed to download. I downloaded all of them, and I can't. It downloads it, but I can't install it. I don't know how to install it.
All right, for a couple of things. What operating system are you running on your EEPC?
It's a Linux.
Which one?
You know, I don't know. How do we find out?
One of the things that you can do is check in the upper left corner if there's an applications menu.
Applications.
On the very top of the screen.
Well, it says internet. It's a network, wireless networks.
All right. What about down in the lower left? Is there a start kind of button down there?
No, there's like a home, and that's about it. It's a very basic. It has webmail, web, Google, Messenger, Skype.
Internet Radio, Wikipedia.
Yeah, that's one of the problems with Linux is you have to know exactly what version you're running so you know which download to do, and then you have to know how to install that download.
Almost every and without seeing it, almost every version of Linux has some form of software library or software repository or software store with it, and your documentation should at least be able to tell you where that is. That probably has Flash already in it somewhere. You just have to install it.
Yeah.
The question is, how do you get to that store? And on your particular version of the EEPC, I'm not entirely certain how you do that. You should have gotten some, I hope, you got some sort of documentation.
Yeah, I know. I just can't find it now. There's a help menu on the top here. Is that, would that help?
It might. It might tell you how to find your software sources. Yeah.
Will it tell you the version of Linux here?
It should, yeah. Asus, the Asus EEPC, it can come with a couple of different,
Yeah, it may say about this computer or about Linux in that help menu.
Desktop comes up. Let me see, there's a, No, it just says, it just gives you what's on the main menu, internet work, learn, play, settings, favorites. No, there's nothing here.
I don't know.
Contents?
It sounds like you may have to bring it to someone who can see the screen. And
yeah,
and
unfortunately,
see
without seeing the screen at this point, it may be the Zandros OS. But I don't know how you add. I'm sorry, I just don't know how you add more stuff to it. I wish I had a better answer for you, but I don't use the EEPC, and I'm not sure what to say about it. I'm not sure.
Okay, so the main thing is I got to find out what version this is.
Well, the main thing you need to do is find the software store or the software add-ons or the. Somewhere there is in there a repository of software you can add to the machine. All versions of Linux come with that. Unfortunately, I don't quite know where you find that in that particular version of Linux. And if you can find that, it should allow you to see hundreds and hundreds of programs that you can add into Zandros, right?
Firefox.
Yes, that would be the browser, but that's not going to help you in this instance. It's something to do with the desktop itself, and I wish I had a better answer for you, but I'm afraid I just don't.
That's okay. I'll keep searching.
Okay, good luck.
Thanks.
I hate to end on a sad note, but there's something truly wrong with you people, because you've just wasted 2 entire hours of your life. Jim's got 65 degrees and sunny. We've got 54 degrees and cloudy, which is pretty normal for Rochester. Some of you listening out there are in 80 degrees. And instead of being out dancing pantsless in the sun, you're here listening to Soundbites, which we appreciate. And we want to thank you. And we hope we'll see you here next, or listen to you. You'll listen. Make a sentence out of that. Next week.
Don't want to go pantsless.
We'll be back for Dave Enright, for Steve Ray, for all the great folks here at Jazz 901. I'm Nick Francesco. We will be back here next week with the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Have a great week.
Celebrating 20 years on air, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.